All right, Parshas Ki Tavo.
We're holding August 28th, 2007. All right, so let's start from the beginning. Page 1068 in your Art Scroll Chumashim. Beginning of Perek Chaf Vav, 26 chapters. We're working through Sefer Devarim. What I'd like to do, as we often do, is read a number of verses inside to get familiar with the actual text of what it is that we're doing, and then we'll discuss it. The topic that we're going to discuss today is the very first mitzvah that's discussed. It's the mitzvah of the Bikurim, the first fruits. It's discussed. It's the first 11 verses on the page. We'll read through them. They're very, very important psukim, some of which you'll be very familiar with, I hope. The background of this mitzvah is fairly straightforward. Every year, the Jewish farmer would take of his first fruits to ripen, specifically from the seven species that the land of Israel is praised with, the wheat, the barley, the figs, the dates, the pomegranate, and the like. When those first fruits ripen, he takes them, and then following the summer, when it ripens in Shavuos time, following so Pesach is the beginning of the spring, 7 weeks later is Shavuos, from Shavuos to the following Sukkot, so the time that we're in right now, he makes a trip to Yerushalayim with his first fruits, and amongst great fanfare and celebration, he brings the first fruits to the Kohen. Kohen takes those fruits, there's a special service that he does in which he waves it, and then those fruits are taken back by the individual farmer. There's a verbal declaration of thanks that he makes, which we will read inside, and then he hands them back to the priest, the Kohen, and they are his to share with the other priests. That's the basic mitzvah of Bikurim, in which the farmers take the first of their fruits, bring them to Yerushalayim, and hand them off to the Kohen. One of a number of mitzvahs of firsts. The first of the animals are brought to be offered as a korban. A firstborn son has to be redeemed. There are a lot of firsts that we give to Hashem, all of which are expressions of everything that we have comes in some way from you, and it's a recognition of us giving that first over to Hashem. I'd like to read these psukim inside. I hope it will not take too long. It's the first 11 psukim here on your page. But I believe it's worthwhile based on what we will be discussing today. So the parasha opens up as follows: the Hayo ki savo el ha'aretz. So this is Moshe speaking to the Jewish people. We are really, as we've been doing for the last, this is the end of his life. These are his final speeches, and he says to the Jewish people, "You're not yet in the land of Israel, but you are about to. You and your descendants are about to. And this is not going to be a mitzvah only to this generation." He's speaking now to the collective Jewish people. "You're about to come into the land of Israel," he says. "Asher Hashem Elokecha nosein l'cho nachalo, which Hashem has given to you as an inheritance, v'rishta v'yishavta ba, you shall possess it and dwell in it." It's an interesting language that he says that we've discussed many times, the concept of the mitzvah to settle the land of Israel, the mitzvah to dwell in the land. And over and over and over, Moshe says to the Jewish people, "You're about to go in, take it, conquer it, settle in it, dwell in it." And again, he says here, "We're about to go in." And then he introduces the mitzvah in Pasuk Beis in the second verse, "V'lokachta mereishis kol pri ha'adama," you will take from the first of the fruits of the land, "asher tovi me'aretz acho," which the land has produced, "asher Hashem alakecha nosein l'cho," you will take from that fruit, "v'samto vatena," place it in a basket, "the halachta el hamakom asher yivchar Hashem alakecha l'shaken shemo shana," go to the place that Hashem has chosen to dwell. Interestingly, this is another example. Hashem in the Torah never uses the words Yerushalayim, never uses the words the Beis HaMikdash as a reference to that place. He always refers to it as the place that I shall choose to dwell, my presence will rest. And we have to go seek out that place and find it and build the Beis HaMikdash. In Tanakh and the prophets, Yerushalayim is mentioned hundreds of times, over 700 times we find references to Yerushalayim. But in the Torah it's always referred to as the place that Hashem shall choose. So Moshe says, you're going to come into the land, you'll take of those first fruits, you'll place them in a basket, bring them in your basket to Yerushalayim. Verse 3, Pasuk Gimel, "Uvosa el ha-Kohen asher yihye bayamim ha-hem," and you will go to the Kohen who will be there in those days, meaning whichever generation it is, whatever Kohen is there, to that Kohen, "v'amarta elav." And here we begin the declaration. Now please note and pay attention, because this is what we're going to be discussing, what exactly it says. And the statement made by the Jew comes in two sections. So here's the first. He's brought his fruits in his basket. He approaches the Kohen in Yerushalayim in the Beis HaMikdash, and he says, Higadati hayom laHashem Elokecha. I have come today. He says, I've come to the land that Hashem has given to Hashem. Kivosi el haaretz asher nishbo Hashem Elokecha laseis lanu. Because I have come to the land that Hashem has given to us. So you come to the Kohen, you make that declaration. I have come today to the land that Hashem has given us, and I've brought these fruits. You don't even really say that. You just say, Gadati Hayom Hashem Elokecha. Now you note in Rashi, Rashi says, why are you making this declaration? So he says, She'eincha kafli tova. I don't want to be a denier of good. Kafli tova is the opposite of hakaras hatov. Hakaras hatov is where we give thanks and recognize the good. So you declare, you give your stuff to the Kohen and you say, I don't want to be a kafli tova, I have come today. That's the first part of your statement. I've come. The Torah then continues in Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, V'lokach ha-kohen ha-tenem mi-odach, the Kohen then takes the basket from your hand, V'hinichu lifnei mizbach Hashem elokach, and he places it before the mizbeach. Then you start your second statement. Now here, this part hopefully you will all be familiar with, and the first person who calls out where it's from wins the prize. Pasuk Hey, fifth Pasuk. So now again, the process is, I brought my basket, I said, I've come. I've approached, I'm in the land, I've come. Kohen takes the basket, puts it on his back. The anisov amarta, you call out and you say, and Chazal are clear, you must actually do this. You have to be able to call out and say, and this is part of the mitzvah of being able to make this formal declaration. What do you say? What do you say before Hashem? Arami oved avi, an Aramean tried to destroy my father. Vayered Mitzrayim, and my forefather went down to Mitzrayim. What are we referring to here? To Lavan, who tried to kill Yaakov. Yaakov, Vayered Mitzrayim, went down to Mitzrayim, following the tribes, following Yosef, who had been sold down there. Vayogar Shom Dim Sei Me'at, they lived there for a little bit. Vayisham Legoy Gadol Atzum Verov, and he became there a great and mighty prosperous nation. So again, just setting up where you're coming. Where is this from, of course?
Pesach Haggadah.
Of course, Pesach Haggadah. So where is the really, where's the Pesach Haggadah from?
Here.
From right here. So this is in the midst of Bikurim. So I brought my first fruits. I've come with my basket. I make the following declaration to the Kohen. Now remember, who's making this declaration? This is some Jew who's been living in the land of Israel, not just this first generation. He could have been living there 40, 50, 60, 70 years already. To a Kohen, 5th, 6th, 7th generation Israelis. And he says to the Kohen, I want you to know, dear Kohen, a Aramean Lavan tried to kill my forefather Yaakov. And my forefather Yaakov went down to Egypt. And he became a great and mighty nation. And he goes through a brief history of the Jewish people. Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Vayareu osonu amitrim vayaanunu, and the Mitzrim, the Egyptians, caused us great hardship. Vayitnu aleinu avudah kashah, they made us work extremely hard. Vanitzak el Hashem elokei avoseinu, we called out and cried to Hashem. Vayishma Hashem es koleinu, Hashem heard our voices. Vayares anyenu, he saw the afflictions, vayasamaleinu, vayaslachatzeinu, our travail, our oppression. Hashem saw all of that in Egypt. Vayotzienu Hashem mi Mitzrayim, Hashem took us out of Egypt, Biyad Chazako, Vizrayin Tuya, with his mighty hand and outstretched arm, Uvimoira Gadol, with great awesomeness, Uva Oisos, Umosim, with signs, with wonders, all sorts of wondrous things. Now this we're all familiar with from the Haggadah. It's a brief history of the Jewish people. Lavan tries to kill Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim. Jews have a hard time in Mitzrayim. They call out to Hashem. Hashem takes him out with a great and mighty hand, outstretched arm. Vayavienu el hamakom hazeh. What's the point of this brief history? And then after taking us out with these mighty wonders, he brought us to this land. He gave us this land, Eretz Zovat Cholov Udvash. He gave us this beautiful land flowing with milk and honey.
But this part isn't in the Haggadah.
Correct. After the word Ofsim is the end of verse 8 is the end of the four verses that's quoted in the Haggadah. Correct. You then continue, he's brought us to this land. He gave us this land flowing of milk and honey. The Atah, verse 10, and now, Hine Hevesi Esreishis Pri Ha'adama Asher Nasatali Hashem. I have brought the fruits that Hashem has given me in this land that he gave to the Jewish people. You put it down in front of Hashem, you pray, and you prostrate yourself before him. And then the verse concludes, and then Moshe says to the Jewish people, that's the end of your declaration. And you should then be joyous and celebrate the good and the blessings which Hashem has bestowed upon you and your house and the levy and all of the people in your midst. That is the mitzvah, really an interesting mitzvah. So you bring the bikurim. The mitzvah itself is fairly straightforward, similar to lots of mitzvahs we have. We bring the bikurim, you make a declaration. What's of note, of course, is the nature of the declaration that the Torah here chooses to give a brief history. You don't have that by a pidyon haben, when a person redeems his firstborn son, or when they bring this first animal for a karbon, that we make this declaration, a formal declaration. I just want everybody here to know the history here. My forefather, Jacob, he was oppressed by Laban. He escaped. He got down to Egypt eventually. The Jewish people were oppressed. Hashem took us out, gave us this land. And it's in this land that he gave me. Here are my fruits. Thank you so much. You really could have almost done with all of that and just said, I have these fruits. Thanks for the land. Thanks for the fruits. I've come to bring my offering. I recognize that. And it would have been done with. So question number one on our table obviously is, why was it necessary at this point for this mitzvah to have this declaration, this formal declaration of a brief history of sorts of the Jewish people, focused primarily on our travails in Egypt and our miraculous escape from there to be given the land, in order to say, and here are my fruits. And the second question, which stems right out of that, is when Chazal were looking to create the Haggadah, and they wanted to tell over the story. So if I were to ask you around this room, where should Chazal have turned to establish the text of the Haggadah? Which part in the Chumash, which pages, which book should they have looked to say over the story? It's obviously the story. Go to Sefer Shmos, go back to where the story of the Exodus. I'm sure you can find lots of verses that describe what took place, that describe the miracles, and instead, what the sages do is they say, no. For our Haggadah, what we want to do is we want to borrow the four verses which are said when a Jew comes to Yerushalayim with his first fruits, and he has to declare there a brief synopsis of Jewish history. Let's take those four verses, and if you're familiar with the Haggadah, we expound upon them. We say, oh, this word is a reference to this, and that word is a reference to that. And we tell the story, not through the story itself, but we tell the story through the Jew's retelling of the story when he comes to Yerushalayim to bring his first fruits. Why? Tell the story straight. Just tell it the way God tells it. Read the story of Exodus. No. You have to read it through the Jew's declaration when he brings his fruit. What's the reason for that phenomena? Okay, those are the two questions on the table. So far, so good? First question is, within the mitzvah of Bikurim, when a Jew brings his first fruit to Yerushalayim, why is it necessary for him to give this brief history of the Jewish people? Why can't he just come to the temple, say, Kohen, on behalf of God, I have brought here my first fruits, thank you for the land. No, he has to say, Father Yaakov, he went down to Mitzrayim, they had trouble, they got out. Why bother with that? And two, whatever his declaration is, why did the sages choose this declaration as the text of the Haggadah from which the story then comes and sprouts forth, and not just tell the story as the story is told? The Rambam, interestingly, I'll take it 1 second, the Rambam writes, you're familiar probably with the phrase that the Rambam writes, that the more you tell the story on the night of the Seder, the language is Harei Zet Meshubach, the more praiseworthy you are. The Haggadah itself says that phrase. When the Rambam says that in his work, describing the halachas, he adds the phrase, whoever tells the story and expounds upon these verses, he is praiseworthy. So he doesn't say it in whoever tells over the story as is told in Exodus. He says, you need to expound on these verses. This is how you have to tell over the story.
Why not just tell it over straight? There's something about this story here that the context of the story that really is relevant to us that we need to know about. Okay, yeah.
So I think that the retelling of the history was necessary because this was a new generation going into the land. And I think that because all the heads of the household had to go to Yerushalayim, I would think that that was the most familiar text that everyone knew, that they didn't necessarily know everything else. And so, because they had to declare it in Yerushalayim, they could then repeat it at the Seder. So that's my thought on it.
Interesting.
Of course, I think something.
Yeah.
I was thinking from the standpoint of the one who says these words, he is, in a sense, he is the fulfillment of Yaakov's prophecy that his children will inherit the land. So, I mean, I'm just connecting it to why he goes back to Yaakov.
I agree. It's true. It is a fulfillment of that.
But you have to be aware of each one who says these words is aware of who he is and his connection.
Why didn't you go back to Abraham?
That's a fair question. I don't have an answer to that question. It's a good, why we start specifically there. I don't know, that's a Pesach class.
We'll get there.
I mean, I'm pushing it off because it's relevant here. Here's the mitzvah of Bikurim, why do we start with Yaakov? But I think the answer, well, I don't know, I don't have a good answer, but I guarantee that you'll probably hear stuff like this, similar to this, come Pesach time if you're still hanging around, or I'm still hanging around. So maybe we'll focus more on that element. That's a good question, why specifically Yaakov?
I think a couple of things. I think the declaration has more to do with that this is the first generation that's not getting manna, which is obviously from God. And so the nature of being a farmer, you plow, you sow, you do everything. You could easy to mistake that it's all from you. So I think the purpose of the declaration as opposed to before or a different time because it's not the manna.
Well,
and
but every generation said it. I mean, 7 generations later, they still have to make the declaration.
No, I mean, but the, in Israel specifically, because it was the changeover, not food from heaven, to this.
Right.
And the reason why the text of the explanation and why from Lavan, I think, is because since history repeats itself, this is the prototype, in other words, for all the future Exodus and redemption.
That has a lot of validity. I think that is actually going to be a starting point for answering Elaine's question, that specifically Yaakov, the oppression that he suffered with Lavan, is a prototype of the exile. Yaakov is our figure that we look to when it comes to exile. The trials and tribulations of Yaakov, each one of the forefathers had their thing, or several of them, and Yaakov is our quintessential exilee, who we look to in terms of how he handled himself while in exile, how he got back. So that, I think, probably has a lot of validity in terms of maybe that it will go far away in answering that question, why we started by him and not by Avram, because of the nature of the Exodus, the exile of Egypt, and the Exodus from it. A good thought. So let me share a thought from my Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Kerem Biavne, the yeshiva I learned in Israel for 2 years. I only met the man twice. He passed away my first year. He was no longer functioning as a Rosh Yeshiva. He was already emeritus when I was there, and he passed away during that first year that I was there. But I consider myself a student of his from his books. He wrote many, many books. Students wrote from him many, many books, and always been a big fan. Just love the way that he that his ideas. I'd like to share an idea that he has. So he points out that one of the focal points of the Leil HaSeder, when we sit down to our Seder with our families, there are a couple of main agendas that we have. Telling over the story is certainly one of them. And the other one, as is mentioned in almost all of the commentaries, is the concept of hodah, of thanks. That this is a night of not just recounting the story, but of giving
thanks to Hashem for the actual events which took place. I can quote you, as he does, many, many of the different sources that mention that explicitly. I'll just ask you to take my word for it that there are several sources that all point that out. That's one of the main themes. So he raises a question that this really fits into a pattern which you find in a couple of places, in which there's a funny way in which we give thanks. And that we give thanks by telling a story instead of by actually giving thanks. Because if you look through your Haggadah, you will not actually find the words, thank you. You will not find an actual thanks on the event. Instead, what we do is the sipur. We tell over the story of what happened, and somehow this obligation which is mentioned in the Rambam, the obligation which is mentioned in many of the Svarim of the book, that we have an obligation to give thanks, is somehow encompassed simply in telling the story. And this night of the Seder fits into a pattern where we find that elsewhere. As you'll recall on Purim, anyone, do we say Hallel on Purim? Anyone remember, do we say Hallel on Purim?
I don't think so.
We don't. Now the Gemara asks the question, why not? On all holidays, minor, major, Hanukkah, Durabbanan, whether or not they're rabbinic or biblical, we say Hallel. So the Gemara asks, didn't the great miracle take place on Purim? Isn't that what we're celebrating? So why don't we say Hallel? Why don't we say some form of praise? Why don't we say some form of thank you formally in the service to do so? So the Gemara answers, the reading of the Megillah is the Hallel. That fills all that we need to do, the Hallel, the Hodah, the praise and the thanks, it's all in there. Now, you're all familiar with Megillah and Purim. There is no formal thank you given. That's not what it is. All that it is recounting the story. And somehow in the recounting of the story, that fulfills this obligation to sing in praise and thanks because we just told over the story. You find the same thing by Hanukkah, where the Gemara, we do say Hallel, and the Gemara says the entire nature of the day of Hanukkah is Hallel v'Hodah, is establishing a day of praise and of thanks. And Rashi comments, where do we fulfill the Hodah, where do we fulfill the thanks? That's done in the Al Hanisim prayer, we say, when you and we bench, and during the Shemona Esrei in Hanukkah, we say the Al Hanisim, and that fulfills the Hodah, the giving of thanks. Now, if you're familiar, if you recall the Al-Hanisim is the exact same thing. All that it does is it tells over the story of what took place. And again, in that is a fulfillment of our giving thanks without ever uttering the words, thank you, I appreciate it, that was great, nice job. None of that. Simply, in recounting the story, we have a fulfillment. So there's several places in which we have this. One of them is this Leil HaSeder, the night of the Seder, in which we tell over the Haggadah, we tell over the story, and somehow are dealing with this idea. Now, what lies behind this idea is something that I know that we've spoken about in this group, but it's a concept which I personally feel it can never be spoken about enough because it's just so critical to our daily functioning, and I know that I struggle with it, so I'm sure we all do on some level, hopefully not as much as I do, but it's just a fundamental principle as we go through our life. That is the concept that in Hebrew there are two words which intersect, which seemingly have very different meanings. And that is the word hoda'ah. Hoda'ah means
acknowledge and thanks.
Acknowledge and thanks, two separate words. And where do we see these two different concepts? When we wake up in the morning, the first thing that we say is modeh ani lefanecha. What does that word modeh ani lefanecha mean? I'm grateful, I am thankful for returning my soul to me. Modim anachnu lach, part of the word, and the word modim is a form of giving thanks. The word hodah is a word which is generally means to give thank you. It also means something else. It means an acknowledgement. It means an admitting, I admit to something. And the Gemara uses the phrase, if you claim that I owe you $100, and I say, it's not true, I only borrowed 50. I'm called a modeh b'miktas. I admitted to half. I didn't thank you. That's not a word of modeh ani lef. I didn't thank you for half. I admitted that
You claim I owe you 100. I'm a mogah that makes us. I admit to half that. I owe you 50. Or if Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are having a dispute, and as they go back and forth with their arguments, Rabbi Yehuda agrees to Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara will say, Moda Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda acknowledges, admits, agrees to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Two different concepts, to thank and to admit, both share the same word.
And Yehuda's from too.
Yehuda also, from the name Yehuda, correct. That is correct. So, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner was a great Rosh Yeshiva in Chaim Berlin, in New York, 20, 30 years ago. So he made famous the following idea, that these two words are very much linked. Giving thanks and admitting or acknowledging lie at the core of the exact same idea. And the way that he described it is, man or woman, by our nature, desire nothing else than independence. You want to be self-sufficient. I want to be able to do everything on my own and not need somebody else. That's just our innate yearning for self-sufficiency. You see it in children all the time, who from the moment they can speak, say, I do myself. It's a constant struggle. When you're trying to get them dressed, you're trying to feed them, you're trying to bathe them, it's always, there's a constant growth that we have from our youngest ages as we get older, of, I don't need your help. Right? I don't need it. I don't want it. I just want to be able to do it myself. And we as adults do the same thing. If you need help, you want somebody to show you. And as soon as they showed you enough that you think you can do it, we always say, alright, I got it. I can do the rest myself. I don't want to be reliant upon anybody or anything. It's just the way that God made us. It's a striving, a desire, a yearning for our own ability to do everything on our own. However, as we all know from our life experience, we really can't do everything on our own. It just doesn't work. We were not created in ways that we can be our own isolated universes in our own orbits without help or need from somebody else. It's just, we all have needs, whether or not it's simply a car breaking down and needing a ride to somewhere else, or all the other things that go on in life. It doesn't work that way. When a person says thank you, in effect, says Rav Kuttner, what he's doing is he's admitting, I was not able to do this on my own. I fell short in my eternal quest for self-sufficiency. Couldn't do it. I needed your help. And in acknowledging the fact that I needed your help, I say, thank you for helping me. That's what I'm doing. I'm thanking you because I couldn't do it on my own. If I couldn't acknowledge that I couldn't do it on my own, I wouldn't have to thank you. But I'm thanking you because I needed you. You helped me out. I didn't have all the goods myself, and you did it. So he writes, these two ideas, which share a word, are really the same idea. One is an outgrowth of the other. The ability to be a moda, to admit, acknowledge the reality of something, is what allows us to say, moda ani lefanecha, thank you Hashem, because I can give thanks when I admit. This is true both in our relationships between man and man, our interpersonal relationships, and it's true certainly in our relationship with Hashem. Our ability to say thanks is really predicated upon our ability to acknowledge that we needed Him. Now, my Rosh Yeshiva points out a beautiful thought, beautiful, beautiful thought. We all know that it's hard to say thank you. It is hard. It's a difficult task. When someone passes you the ketchup, it's very easy to say thank you. Why is it so easy to say thank you when somebody passes you the ketchup? Because I'm not indebting myself to you at all. So you pass me the ketchup. The ketchup's over there, and I'm over here, and you pass it. I could have gotten up and gotten it myself. Like, what's the big deal? So of course I could say thanks a lot. Because I'm not really giving up on myself very much when I say thank you. But when a person does something really extraordinary for us, it's hard to say. It's hard to thank a parent, spouse, a child, a friend. It's hard to say, a teacher, hard to give a real thank you. So the Rosh Yeshiva pointed out, the difficulty, it's just a beautiful, simple thought, the difficulty is not really in saying thank you, like we like to think, and that's the way that we say it. The hard part's not in saying thank you, the hard part is in recognizing how much you needed the other person. That's the hard part. once you recognize it, it's actually pretty easy to say a thing. That flows naturally. The hard part is saying to oneself, acknowledging that other person did something for me which I could not have done on my own, and I am indebted to you. That's hard to acknowledge. We fight it inside, internally. We fight it. We make excuses, really, like this, I could have done it myself like this, whatever it is. And it's that internal fight, that internal struggle of recognizing the truth in the fact that I needed help in this circumstance is where the fight is. Once you get past that, the thank you can actually flow fairly easily. But where we struggle is in that acknowledgement. And the sages were very well aware of this. When they say, to say a thank you, how did what phrase do the sages use for thank you? Hakaras hatov. Heard that phrase before? Hakaras hatov. What does the word hakaras hatov mean?
Recognize the good.
Recognizing the good, exactly. Saying thank you in the eyes of Chazal is not saying thank you. Saying thank you are words. A thank you is really hakaras hatov, recognizing the good that was done. It's because that's where the struggle is. Recognize somebody did something for you. Don't fight that. Don't deny that. What's called not recognizing, not saying thank you, as Rashi said, is kafui tova, denying the good. Because that's really where the issue is. Do you acknowledge? Do you not acknowledge? The saying of the thank you is, it's not an afterthought. It's a very important part, but it comes after. It comes after the recognition of something that's been done. You're able to actually say the thing. Can you try to get the whole idea out, and then we'll...
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, when we have these two concepts, so in effect, there are two ways that we express our thank you. Just based on what we just said, they could be verbal ways. There are two stages, so to speak, in saying thank you. The first one is simply stating or declaring that which has taken place. Within that declaration, within the statement of truth as to what has happened, is a form of saying thank you. There's then the actual giving of thanks, which comes second. What comes before the giving of thanks is the stating it. Oh, you know, a classic example when the school kids go on a trip. So the teacher always says, "Hakaras hatov, don't forget to thank the bus driver." Mm-hmm. Thank you. So a child who would come up and simply state, "You drove me from the school to the museum," is stating a fact, which is in a silly example because it's such an obvious thing that was done. I know I just drove you. You're on my bus and you're getting off of my bus. But nonetheless, at its core, just stating that fact is acknowledging the reality of what happened and is really the first step in then verbalizing the thank you. It's really not necessary in that example because, you're on the bus, I know. But life isn't always so clear when somebody has done something for us that you could skip that first step and just go right to the thank you. More often than not, or at least in the difficult situations, simply stating the fact is the fundamental first step in being able to acknowledge the thank you. So with this idea, so then things become a lot more clear as to what is going on in our examples that we have. And the way that I would like to express this and use it as our guide is from our daily sitter. So we have a couple of siddurim here, so you just have to look on with each other if you can. If you'll flip, I have a maksa. If you flip to the modim in the daily Shemona Esrei, so I don't know if someone can call out a page number. I have a different copy over here.
Here's page 112.
112 in your daily sitter.
Is that the modim?
Okay. Let me just get one over here for myself.
Do we say this when repeating?
When the Chazan repeats the Neda, then we say this.
Okay, now.
And we say it too.
Mm-hmm. I'm having difficulty finding what I need. There we go. Okay. Look at it. This is, from the modem, familiar to most of us, I hope. There's a double phrase for thanks here in the first two lines. Phrase opens up, modim anachnu loch. Let's leave the word modim untranslated for now. We have two types of translations that we can have on that. But some, we are grateful, acknowledge, we thank something, you, Hashem. She'atahu Hashem Elokeinu, the Elokei Avoseinu Yolom Va'ed, that you are our God, the God of our fathers forever. Tzur Chayenu, the rock of our lives. Magen Yishenu, the shield of our salvation. Atahu L'dor V'dor, you are for all generations. So the opening phrase is what we would call a acknowledgement. You are Hashem, our God. You are the God of us, of our forefathers. You are the shield of our life, everything of our salvation for every generation. No delcha. And then we have that phrase again. That we already started with that. Modim anachlach. And then we repeat, no delcha. We will give thanks to you, nisaper tilasecha, and sing your praises. Al chayenu, on our lives, on our souls, on the miracles that you do for us, on the wondrous events. And then we list actual things which have been done and are constantly being done for us. And what you have here when you break this down are our two levels in which we open up. Modim anachnu lach would be most accurately translated as we acknowledge you, admit, acknowledge, statement of fact, you are our God, you are the God of our forefathers, you are our shield, you are our rock. And we then thank you, the second phrase of v'no delecha, for our lives, for our health, for the fact that you protect us, that you do miracles for us. So it's an opening, it's a process in which before we can thank God for the fact that we exist, we have to first acknowledge that He is in fact our God and the rock of our lives. So in this section of the Shemona Esrei, which is defined as Hoda'ah, of giving thanks, that's the part of the Shemona Esrei that we are in. How do we give thanks? It opens with an acknowledgement, Modim Anachnu Lach, which is really an admittance, an acknowledgement, V'noda Lecha, and we will then thank you, and we list all the things that we want to then thank God for. And it's that pattern that we follow in our mitzvah of Bikurim. When we come to the Beis HaMikdash, at the end of the day, what do we want to accomplish? We want to thank Hashem for the fact that He's given us this land and the fruits, and we have our sustenance, we have our produce, we've worked the fields, and this is the fruits of our labors, literally. That's the final phrase, if you'll go back to verse 10 in the Chumash, which is really the goal. Ve'atah, and now, Hine heveitzias reishis pri ha'adama, I have brought forth the beginning of my crops. I've brought forth to you my fruits, which you have given me. But what do we need to do until we get there? What do we do until we can actually formally say, I brought you my fruits? We have to give a brief history of the Jewish people. We have to acknowledge, we have to have it ingrained within us, the reality and the truth of where we're coming from, what's going on. And to fully acknowledge that, you got to know it from the beginning to the end. You got to have a whole picture of what's going on. This farmer, 7, 8, 10 generations into the land of Israel, for him to be able to bring his fruits and fully say, I needed you for the... I can't just... In order to be able to say thank you, I have to acknowledge what it is that you did. And it's not so obvious as the kid on the bus that, well, obviously I drove you here because, look, you're on my bus and I'm the one who took you from point A to point B. You can just start with a thank you. That would be sufficient. You don't need to declare to the bus driver, you're the one who picked me up at school and drove me the 20 miles. Thank you. You could just say, thank you. But when we bring our fruits, we are struggling with, well, every man and woman struggles with, I did this on my own. I've been out in the fields for the last 6 months. I've been checking the weather conditions. I've been plowing. And the sweat of my brow testifies to the fact that I am responsible for this fruit. Well, we could just say a thank you. And if you just say a thank you, well, the words are there. But we all know how many times we can utter the words of thanks and not ever really have the deep-seated acknowledgement of what it really means to say thank you. So in order for the Jew to come and say the thanks necessary for the fruits of his labors, for the land upon which he dwells, what he first needs to do is go through the acknowledgement process. He comes to Yerushalayim, he comes to the Beis HaMikdash, and there's a declaration he makes, and he says, Kohen, my forefather Yaakov was oppressed by Lavan. And he was saved by Hashem, and he went down to Mitzrayim, and we were oppressed over there and afflicted, and we called out to Hashem, and Hashem took us out, and he did miraculous events for us, and he is the one who brought us to this land. That's how we got here. You got to know where you're coming from. The 10th generation Israeli also needs to know, no, Hashem brought you to this land, not your father and his father and his father. So you go back to the beginning, and you tell the story, and then you could say, this is the land I have come. See, you open up to the Kohen. I have come from the land that Hashem has given us. I don't want to be a denier of good. Rashi comments. I want to be a hakara satov, a makir tov, someone who recognizes the good. And so you declare formally, publicly, from the beginning, first recognizing, acknowledging, and admitting, letting it, paving the way, so to speak, for your ability to then actually say a thank you. And that's what is, says my Rosh Hashiva, that's what's going on with this declaration. When Chazal said, Jews for generations will sit down at their Seder with their families, and they need to tell over the story of the Haggadah. Where did they turn to find the story? So they said the best place to go, we don't need to just look at Exodus and just tell over the story. We want the context of that Jew who came to Yerushalayim with his Bikurim. We want that context of the specific goal of not just as it's recounted, as it happened, as we have in Sefer Shmos. I don't want just the story as it was, that, as it happened. The Torah is telling us, this is what took place. I want the Jew who's telling over the story in Yerushalayim with the fruits of his labors in his hand in a basket, reaping the fruit. I want his story. I want his story in which he acknowledges the truth of the reality that Hashem has been the one who took us out of Mitzrayim through all of our affliction, brought us through great miracles to Yerushalayim. It's that Jew's story that I want to serve as my template for all Jewish history as us telling over the story. Because not just are we telling over the story, but included in that story is the giving of thanks, is the hodah, the recognizing all that Hashem did. And so we could just tell over the story, but what better way than to just tell over the story than to have the Jew himself tell over the story. So we repeat his words. We repeat the Jew's words from when he came to Yerushalayim. That's the template that we use for the telling over the story. He whoever tells over the story more, Hareza Meshubach. The more we tell over the story, the more praiseworthy we are, the more that we're recognizing the reality and the truth in God's direction of the Jewish history. That's how we tell the story. It's all encompassed in this mitzvah of Bikurim, of the Jew who brings his fruits to Yerushalayim. The idea is a powerful one. The idea of recognizing the reality of the thanks before uttering the words. Very often, when a person gets a thank you, and a person says, "You didn't," or an apology even, or a thank you, says, "You didn't really mean that." What that is this idea, is you can utter the words all you want, but if you don't start your thank you with a verbal declaration of an acknowledgement, so then the thank you falls flat. Just like the apology falls flat. If you don't open up with, this is what I did wrong, this is what should have happened, I'm sorry, this is what you did for me, I recognize what you did, thank you, it totally changes it. And that's what we do when we do it by Bikurim. That's why sometimes our words fall flat, because inside, we never really acknowledge what we did wrong. We never acknowledge what the other person did for us. And then the words are meaningless. The words don't have the oomph behind them because of this. And that's what the Jew teaches. This is what we teach. This is what the Torah teaches us. First, you tell the whole story. Then you say the thanks for the fruits. And that's what Chazal wanted on the Pesach Seder. They wanted that story of the Jews recognizing that history.
You remind me of one of my little pieces. We get a lot of thank you notes from young people whom we sent gifts to, whether it's a wedding gift or a bar mitzvah gift or bat mitzvah gift. And, dear Mr. and Mrs. Griss, thank you for your gifts. We should be able to share a lot of simchas together, love, and I say, well, where is the gift? Did they get my gift? Do they know what I gave
them?
They
could have written that before the bar mitzvah.
I say, well, what's the point? Yeah. Mommy said, write a thank you note.
Right.
And it's very
not acknowledging what you gave. You thank you for giving me.
It leaves a little hole.
Yeah.
Well, somebody said in a just, they would spend it wisely. We didn't give them money. Yeah.
They already came back from the pawn shop. That's the
I have a serious question, though. In our money-driven society. Success is people who make the most money. And they could pay their way for help and everything. How do you get, so to speak, workaholics? You know, the very successful people who it could appear to them everything of their own doing because they're smart, they're successful, they accomplish business, whatever it is. How do you get enlightened them that, you know, they're still, even if it's the little guy underneath them, there are people who help them to be the big guy, so to speak? Right. I don't know if I phrased it so you understand.
I assume your question is how do we teach to people who don't yet appreciate that there's a God running the world that they have to give thanks to Him.
But also to other people, because we're saying thanks to other people.
That's a fine question, and I'm not even going to attempt to answer that in the 20 seconds that that is the question. How do we teach this lesson? How do we get this out to the world? That's a fair question.
I meant workaholics to other people.
Yeah, same question. Yes, we need to teach.
So that's another
question. That's what it's all about. There's each individual learning that it's not all about me. And that's what life is about.
It's not the little guy that has to say thank you, but also the big guy.
What you're stating is what life is about. That's what Putner was saying. Man's struggle is, I can do this on my own. I did do this on my own. That's man's struggle. So our goal and one of the tasks we have in life is to recognize, I did this with the help of Hashem. That's I could say those words all I want. I have that same struggle. I could say that. That's why people will say, you know, Baruch Hashem, Be'ezras Hashem, with the help of Hashem, with Yafet Hashemai. And a lot of times it sounds, to a lot of people, like it sounds fake. You don't really mean, you're saying words. And then sometimes it's true, but it's all a matter of, I'm just trying to train myself. When someone says, how did you do it? I did well, Baruch Hashem. I'm just trying to train myself. You know, if I mean it every time, I don't know, maybe not. But that when I speak, when I talk to people, when I acknowledge things that have been done, it's just an acknowledgement, a little bit, trying to get away from that feeling of, I did it, I was great, to, I had help. And that's a task, it's a struggle. And we try to use words which constantly help us in that, which remind us of that. And if it doesn't work every time, all right. But this is life struggle, and you're just touching on that and saying, yeah, we need to, that's what we struggle with. That's, people at the top struggle with that more than people in the bottom. The people in the bottom know that I'm reliant on the people above me. People who are on the top, who are using the people on the bottom, have a much greater struggle that there's somebody on top of them, because they're not getting the paycheck from the person above them. They're in control. And 100%, that's a bigger struggle. The higher up the ladder you climb in any area of life, the more difficult the struggle this becomes.
I heard something interesting, I believe it was from Rabbi Friend, about the word reshit, that explains why we would need to say so much in acknowledgement that the first word of the Torah is bereshit. So with the idea of firsts, bereshit, in the concept of first, when a man would eventually come and say in the land of Israel that something was given from the earth, but it was Hashem that did it, that was the whole purpose of the creation of the world for that moment. That was something I believe was Rabbi Friend that said that.
Yes.
And that's why there's such an acknowledgement in that paragraph.
Very nice idea. Yeah, fits perfectly with what's going on. Wonderful. All right, ladies and gentlemen, a great afternoon to all of you.
Thank you as well.